Did you know that St. Luke's University Health Network, based in the Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania, has been recognized by the U.S. government as the highest performing health system in the United States for quality? You heard right. St. Luke's number one recognition affirms our status as the top leader among the most respected healthcare providers in the nation, including Houston Methodist and the Mayo Clinic. To state it simply, if you want to receive the best care when you go to a hospital, come to St. Luke's.
WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
talking the news with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me. Good morning. 5 o'clock. It's Tuesday, March 5th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Rain on and off throughout this day. Kind of a washout. The high 51. Tonight and overnight, cloudy, low 46, and then more rain tomorrow. Showers, early, steady rain in the afternoon, high 53. If you're walking out the door with us right now, 43 and raining in Freeport out on Long Island. It's 44 and raining in Cedar Grove down in New Jersey. And it's 43 and drizzling here in Midtown. So much to get to as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends in the morning. It's always wild and fun, or wild and great, I should say, to watch somebody cry during a goodbye press conference, especially when it's like this big, brutish football player. Jason Kelce, yesterday announced that he was retiring from the Eagles. Of course, he's Travis's brother, the least less famous brother of those two brothers. So yesterday, he goes before a bunch of reporters, and they hold this press conference, and he makes the announcement. His brother was there, by the way, to support him. They're very close. And announces that he is going to step down and retire from football. And he can't make it through the press conference. I mean, he's just crying.
13 seasons in Philadelphia. And I look back on a career filled with ups and downs.
Yeah, so he was drafted by the Eagles 2011, sixth round, played 13 seasons. He helped us win team win a Super Bowl, Super Bowl 52, and he was just an all-around pretty good player.
Cleveland Heights, I entered the University of Cincinnati as a walk-on. As a linebacker, I had no idea what to expect, but scenes from Rudy would often race in my mind.
Yeah, he never thought he would be a pro football player, and now he's done. And, of course, now he has to start a second part of his life. Not clear. He didn't say exactly what that was going to be. His brother crying in the crowd sat at that press conference, too. Reminded me of, and I always think, like, what's going to happen when you do retire? I have brothers older than me that are getting ready to retire, and it's intense to think that, like, this is it. You're going to stop working. And in the case of Jason Kelce, doing something he loved and dreamed about doing, playing in the NFL, and now he's finished, it has to be incredibly intense. And I had this moment. Do you remember Bruce Anderson? Bruce Anderson was this great, fantastic news anchor that was on here at WABC for a really long time. Did afternoon news. Actually, he was in all different day parts. Sometimes he was in morning drive. But when he was finishing his career, he was in afternoon drive, an incredibly generous guy. Boy, he taught me so much. I used to fill in for him. Then I worked with him. Just a great guy. And on his final day, he didn't seem like the kind of guy who was going to cry through a newscast. I mean, just didn't seem like that kind of guy. But then when it came around to doing his last newscast, which I think was a 7 o'clock one, he looked at me and he said, "I can't do it. I can't do this. I'm gonna cry through the newscast." And I said, "What do you want me to do? You want me to do the news?" And he goes, No, I have to do it. It's my last one." And then he came to me and about 10 minutes later, he had left the room and he came back 10 minutes later and he said, "I taped it," which I thought was great. I mean, he should have just done it live and cried through it because the audience would have loved that. But he taped it because he knew. He said, "I can't do it. I won't get through it. I'll cry." So I think, like, oh, is that going to happen to me? I mean, Bruce Anderson's crying. I never thought that guy would cry. Anyway, so it was nice to see that with Jason yesterday. But you can understand the tears after spending your whole life dedicated to one sport and then quitting and then trying to figure out what's next. I mean, he's going to be okay no matter what he does. He is a successful guy on the field. No doubt he will be successful off the field. Up in Suffolk County, we've been watching this story since last Thursday, trying to get more information from police about these severed body parts that were found in Southards Pond Park. It is the question I've been asked every day since this happened last Thursday. A schoolgirl on the way to class last Thursday found a severed arm on the side of the road in Babylon. Police come in. It leads to a search. They find another arm. They find a leg. They find a head. It's two different bodies, a man and a woman. So yesterday, the Suffolk County executive, Ed Romaine, he was at some sort of function, and News 12 caught up with them, and they said, hey, what's the latest on this? People really want to know what's going on.
They have several leads. A lot of it is laboratory work. A lot of that is the work of our police laboratory and our medical examiner.
Yes, so he's claiming that they're on top of this, and they're not worried that there's some guy out there, or some gal for that matter, chopping up other bodies. But you can imagine in Babylon, people are freaked out. They're like, hey, I want to know the answers of what's happening here. He says the investigation is going well. The medical examiner trying to ID those body parts, but they think it's a one-off. At least that's what he claims.
I believe this was an isolated incident where people chose a park to put the bodies, not where it occurred. And I think anyone that's looking at that will tell you that. So it did not occur in that park.
Okay, so he didn't give us a whole lot of detail, but they are claiming they think this is a one-time thing, but no arrests have been made, and they have not ID'd those bodies. In Crown Heights last night, boy, it was a tough night. If you have not been following this story in Crown Heights, three people murdered there last week. One of them, a 13-year-old boy, Troy Gill. He was on his way home from a Nets game. This guy was not involved in gangs. He just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. They have not caught up with this killer. His mom taking part in this anti-violence march last night in Crown Heights.
He was not in a gang. He was a great boy. He had a big personality. And he was too big to be here. And he's gone, but his spirit is here.
Yeah, I'm amazed that she was even able to take part in that rally. But she said she wanted to be there because she wanted to make sure people knew that her son was just a great kid, that he had done nothing wrong, just wrong place, wrong time.
He was tiny and mighty, big heart, man. Very boisterous person. He loved to dance. He loved music.
He was a baby, and that should never happen to him or anybody else's baby or anybody.
Yeah, she's right about that. There are two other people killed last week. A 33-year-old Lamine Ba, he was shot in the head. Cops don't know what happened to him. So far, have not caught up with his killer. And then you had this 37-year-old bodega worker, Nazim Berry. He was shot and killed last week as well. Some dope, some creep, some killer now came into his bodega and asked him for one of those $2 cigars for free. And Nazim told him no. And then he came back and he shot Nazim. So just awful stuff happening in Crown Heights. WABC News Time 509. It seems like Bob Menendez got some bad news yesterday. It seems one of the people accused of bribing him, the one who allegedly gave him a Mercedes-Benz in return for help dealing with the state attorney general in a case he was involved in, now admits that he did give the Menendez that Mercedes-Benz. That, according to NBC, the judge overseeing this corruption trial ruling that items seized in a search of Menendez's home and phone records will all be allowed in his trial.
During the searches of Menendez's home in Englewood Cliffs in June of 2022, FBI agents seized several gold bars and hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash. Meantime, last week, a co-defendant in the case, Jose Uribe, pleaded and agreed to cooperate with the prosecution. I'm Brian Shook.
Yesterday marked the first day of public hearings for New Jersey Transit, as passengers could potentially see a 15% hike in fares if the board votes in favor of the proposal. 15%. Joe Vergassi, he's head of the New Jersey Association of Railroad Passengers. He's gearing up to speak in front of the New Jersey Transit Board this week on behalf of riders, and he says 15% is outrageous.
Now paying the highest monthly commuter train fares in the country now before the fare increase. Anybody who can will get off the system.
And much like MTA, these public hearings are just sort of kind of nonsense because they're going to do whatever they want to do, but they're holding these public hearings this week. New Jersey Transit says the hike is needed to fulfill a $107 million shortfall. Part of the problem is a fair amount of people who did take New Jersey Transit before are no longer because they're able to work from home. That's part of it. And then they just haven't had a fare hike in a while and they need the money. But they're also going to increase again, apparently, in 2025 if that goes through. And that taking place as New Jersey commuters are just feeling like they're getting socked from no end. So even if you get off the train, you decide, okay, I'm going to commute into the city by car. Then you, of course, have congestion pricing to deal with, which may be instituted as early as June. Those public hearings, the final ones taking place yesterday. And Bergen County's executive, Jim Tedesco, taking part, he told MTA board members that he'll see them in court next month, that he's not going to let this happen.
This is nothing but a shameful money grab that will detrimentally hurt all of New York City's neighbors. If enacted, it is no doubt it will result in even more traffic for Bergen County.
Yeah, so $15 to enter south of 60th Street in Manhattan, the new toll. The MTA says they will get it going in June. That's, of course, if they can beat these lawsuits that they're facing. While we're in New Jersey, the New Jersey Department of Transportation crews, they're out in force starting today. They're starting to plug those potholes on state roads. The New Jersey Turnpike's great, by the way, and the parkway's pretty good, too. But if you go onto the side streets, man, they are bad. Apparently, 93,000 potholes have already been filled by these crews, and they think they could end up filling about 162,000 in the next couple of months. So the warning here is they're going to do most of this work during the day. So get ready to have some moments when you're driving around where you're going to have to be caught in some sort of traffic as you move around lanes that are being filled with potholes. They said most of these potholes are going to be filled between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. across the state. So be careful. And if you see a pothole, they actually have a number you can call, 1-800-POTHOLE. That's easy enough to remember, 1-800-POTHOLE, to report potholes in New Jersey. Today is Super Tuesday. It will not be a suspense-filled day, unfortunately. Remember the old days when we had these primaries and it really kind of felt like it mattered about who was going to win? But we kind of know the outcome already, right? It's going to be Joe Biden against Donald Trump, at least it looks that way, come November. And so now you have all these primaries. It'll be interesting to see how many people show up, sort of knowing this is kind of a done deal. So shaping up to be this suspense-free day, essentially. 15 Republican primaries and caucuses will take place today. Democrats in 16 states and territories going to do the same. A total of 865 delegates are at stake on the GOP side, about a third of the total that'll be doled out before the summer's Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. And this all comes after former President Trump was told yesterday by the Supreme Court he can remain on the presidential primary ballot in Colorado, where they were trying to keep him off that ballot. White House reporter, attorney John Decker, not surprised by the Supreme Court ruling.
I was in the Supreme Court for oral arguments, and all nine justices were very skeptical about the action taken by the Colorado Supreme Court. They were troubled by the idea that one state could essentially remove a presidential candidate from the election ballot. And that is evident by the unanimous decision by the Supreme Court. It will determine whether or not the special counsel, the government, can proceed with its election interference case.
Yeah, so the Colorado State Supreme Court had ruled to remove Trump from the ballot, claiming he was an insurrectionist who incited the January 6th Capitol riot. The high court said no, unanimously said you can't do that. You can't keep him on the ballot. So he'll be on the ballot in Colorado because they actually have their Super Tuesday primary today. We're going to get Trump's reaction to all this and a poll about Joe Biden that's not good for his campaign. But first, 5:15, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Tuesday. Oh, it's Tuesday, yeah. Yep. Happy Tuesday. Good morning, Justin Allen.
Happy Tuesday. Good morning to you as well. Noam Lane. Start here on the floor locally in the NBA. The Nets lost a close one at home to the Memphis Grizzlies. Final score there, 106-102. Nick Claxton had 21 points for the Nets, who were coming off consecutive victories over Atlanta that had allowed them to pull within two games of the Hawks for 10th place in the Eastern Conference and the final spot in the play-in tournament. Brooklyn is right back at it tonight at home, welcoming in the Philadelphia 76ers for a 7:30 p.m. tip-off. Additionally, the Knicks return to action at the Garden, getting set to welcome in the Atlanta Hawks for a 7:30 p.m. tip-off as well. In the NHL, the Rangers were the only local squad in action yesterday, just to get doubled up on home ice by the Florida Panthers. Final score 4-2. Will Cooley and Chris Kreider scored for the Metro Division leading Rangers, which lost for the third time in four games, and after, I should say, their 10-game winning streak. The Blue Shirts also had their 6-game home winning streak snapped. Shesterkin finished with 25 saves on the night. Artemi Panarin got his 50th assist and 85th point of the season, both team highs. Only two of the Rangers in franchise history have 50 assists in three straight seasons. That's going to be Mark Messier and Wayne Gretzky. Good company. Looking ahead to tonight on the ice, the Islanders return to action at home, set to face off against the visiting St. Louis Blues at 7:30. The Devils will lace them up tonight as well, set to get going a bit earlier at 7 p.m. at home against the aforementioned Panthers. They'll do so without now former head coach Lindy Ruff, who's fired yesterday, with New Jersey currently struggling to contend in a clogged Eastern Conference. Not far removed, though, from winning a playoff round last season. Travis Green, an assistant for Ruff and the former coach of the Vancouver Canucks, was named the club's interim head coach. Couple of notable headlines coming out of the NFL offseason yesterday. Firstly, out of Philadelphia, as much as it pains me to report this, Eagles star center Jason Kelce, one of the key leaders for a team that has made 6 postseason appearances and 2 Super Bowl trips over the past 7 seasons, announced his retirement in a tear-filled, very tear-filled speech yesterday. It lasted about 45 minutes, mostly because he was breathing heavily and
crying
and leaking his tears all over the podium. I mean, right when he sat down. No, he couldn't get it out.
And his brother there also crying, sitting in the crowd there.
They're both, you know, if you watch the podcast, if you listen to the podcast, they're both big teddy bears. They like to shed a tear every now and then. So, and they're very close. They've become very close. So that was nice to see his whole family there, his wife Kylie, and we wish him the best in retirement. He's brought the Eagles a lot of success. Secondly, out west in Denver, the Broncos have informed 9-time Pro Bowl quarterback Russell Wilson that they plan to release him, a move that ends a tumultuous 2-season run with the team. The move will be effective as of the start of the new league year, set to begin on March 13th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Wilson's release will end a very disappointing chapter for both sides. The Broncos won 11-19 in Wilson's starts over 2 seasons and failed to make the playoffs. Sean Payton benched him with 2 games remaining in 2023, a move that in effect marked the end of the quarterback's career in Denver, one that began when he signed that 5-year, $242.6 million deal just a couple of short years ago. The Broncos will take an $85 million hit in dead money over the next 2 seasons because of this release. That is your Sports Gnome, and I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 521. So former President Trump, happy that the Supreme Court sided with him and decided that Colorado could not keep him off the ballot, the primary ballot today. He praised the Supreme Court from his Mar-a-Lago estate following the decision yesterday.
They worked long, they worked hard, and frankly, they worked very quickly on something that will be spoken about 100 years from now and 200 years from now. Extremely important.
The former president says he's dealing with a lot of out-of-control judges, rogue prosecutors.
A court shouldn't be doing that, and the Supreme Court saw that very well, and I really do believe that will be a unifying factor. While most states were thrilled to have me, you know, there were some that didn't, and they didn't want that for political reasons. They didn't want that because of poll numbers, because the poll numbers are very good. We're beating President Biden in almost every poll.
Yeah, I don't think anybody who was watching that case thought it would end any other way. Meanwhile, voters becoming increasingly concerned with President Biden's age ahead of the 2024 race. This New York Times Siena poll that came out showed 47% of voters strongly agree that President Biden is too old to be an effective president.
I mean, you can see when he gives speeches, he doesn't seem like he's all know what he's saying. So I think he is too old.
Him falling on the floor and mumbling, stumbling on his words, everything. It's just, you just can't get it right.
Yeah, 21%, by the way, strongly agree that former President Trump is also too old to be an effective leader.
You know, he just don't look like he's alert. People got to guide him when he walk in. Everything is just crazy.
I don't see him making good decisions. You know, I don't think his mental state is there. Maybe he has Alzheimer's or something.
These are all New Yorkers, by the way. This New Yorker, though, are not totally concerned with Biden's age.
Right about now, I'm just looking for somebody with some solutions, to be honest with you. So it's not a matter so much of age. As long as we're making good decisions that make good sense for the good people,
so
we're all good to go.
Biden is the oldest sitting president at 81 years old, but Trump isn't far behind, 77 years old. This New York Times Siena poll, 47% of voters, again, agreeing that Biden too old to be an effective president in the White House. Down to Texas, 523 wildfires that have been ripping across the Texas panhandle have devastated farmers and ranchers that dominate the region. Russell Baying, he heads the Texas Farm Bureau, says that cattle and horses have been trapped by the flames.
This particular area is big ranching country. Folks that have herds of mama cows and are raising calves.
And we're being told losses are just off the charts. That's why they've set up a relief fund. The farmers' ranches have their homes insured, but not the miles of fences or their herds.
You grew good grass. Cattle prices are pretty good, and then something like this hits. It's just a tough deal.
Yeah, the region's actually home to more than 80% of the state's cattle, and more than 500 structures have been burned to the ground, and all kinds of losses. They're still totaling this all up.
Farmers and ranchers insure their homes like other people do, but ranchers don't. We don't insure our fences. We don't insure our cattle.
Let's head over to Alabama. We were telling you last week about an Alabama Supreme Court ruling which said that frozen embryos created in vitro fertilization are legally considered children. That has set off alarm bells in other red states, Republican-controlled states. Texas Governor Greg Abbott says it's an important issue.
Texas is a pro-life state, and what that means in part is we want to promote life and promote parents having more children.
But there are reports, though, that some Texas women are looking to move their frozen embryos to a facility in a different state. The debate over IVF started with some religious groups calling for restrictions. They believe that destroying embryos is akin to abortion.
This is an issue. The state legislature, not just in Texas, but candidly across the country, will take up and evaluate and kind of go through all the very complicated issues. What's going to happen if the mother passes away before she's able to access them? What's going to happen in the case of a divorce? And a lot of other complicated issues.
So those are all good questions. Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz down in Florida speaking out on reproductive rights, the importance of in vitro fertilization and genetic testing.
Why should a judge or a politician decide whether
I'm not sure how that bite got in there, but that sounds awful. Anyway, she's fighting the same fight, it seems to be, that the governor is trying to figure out how this affects everybody involved. Texas expected to go to court this week in an attempt to save a new state law that allows local cops to arrest anybody they believe crossed the border illegally. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is furious that a federal judge blocked the start date today.
The first thing that we'll do if the Supreme Court upholds Senate Bill 4 is that we'll begin hiring Border Patrol.
Yeah, he says Texas has the cash to hire Border Patrol agents to do the job the federal government, he says, is refusing to do. Opponents of Texas's law compare it to Arizona's failed Show Me Your Papers law. It was struck down by the Supreme Court.
We'll hire them all. We have the money in Texas to do so. And the federal government won't have a Border Patrol left, and we'll take care of the border.
More than two dozen former U.S. immigration judges signed a letter condemning the Texas law as unconstitutional. NASA, SpaceX, celebrating the successful launch of the Crew 8 mission to the International Space Station. Three Americans, a cosmonaut, going into space Sunday night. Here's what they're up to.
Crew 8 will dock to the forward port of the International Space Station. They will stay docked until late August, and we have about 250 experiments in science and research, technology development.
The crew was expected to dock about 3 a.m. this morning. You know what? I don't have confirmation that they did, but the SpaceX Crew Dragon Endeavor went atop a Falcon 9 booster Sunday night from Cape Canaveral, Kennedy Space Center.
We looked at the photos. Eventually, it was determined that the size of the defect or separation of that RTV seal was within the qualified limits of the design.
I have no idea what she's talking about, but the mission is the first for three out of four members of that Crew X. They'll spend their time aboard the International Space Station doing a whole bunch of experiments. They'll be there up for about 6 months or so. The opening bell, it rings this morning on Wall Street after trading got off to a sluggish start on Monday. Stocks struggled for direction with the tech-heavy NASDAQ and the S&P 500 briefly turning higher in the afternoon trading. At the closing bell, the Dow lost, though, 97 points. S&P 500 fell 6. NASDAQ dropped 67 points.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
Talking the News with Noam
on 77 WABC.
That is me, 532. Good morning. It is Tuesday, March 5th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Rain on and off throughout this day, the high 51. Tonight and overnight, clouds hang around, low 46. And then Wednesday, we're going to do it all over again. Showers early, steady rain in the afternoon, high 53. If you're walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are. 43 and raining in Freeport out on Long Island. It's 44 and raining in Cedar Grove down in New Jersey. And it is 42 and they're calling it misty here in Midtown. We'll start this half hour in New Jersey, the story of this missing hiker who went into the woods at Ringwood State Park on Sunday. Monday, she was still missing. Her family had reported her missing Sunday night. She's from Wayne. She had gone on a hike near Skylands Manor, which is beautiful, by the way, if you've never been there. But she never came home. And thankfully, they have found her, but it took a while.
She was safe. No apparent injuries, but was definitely very much disoriented, as you could expect most people to be, kind of trekking through the woods at night.
63-year-old Carol Heimbach, not clear if she was going for a long hike or was just going for a walk and then just lost her way. Sometimes that does happen. Authorities had reached out to everybody in the area saying, hey, have you seen her? And people will, when police ask them to do something, will sometimes follow what they ask them to do. And in the case of this, this homeowner went and looked at his Ring camera and saw footage of Carol walking by his house and handed over that footage to police. And that's what helped find her. Good job by that homeowner.
This individual obviously took the time, recognized, was aware of the situation, and appropriately called the authorities. To where we can get this to a positive resolution.
Yeah, so she was found actually on the New York side of the park. They border each other in Sloatsburg. She was taken to Good Samaritan Hospital in Suffern. And from all we've heard, she is okay, but as you heard from the police officer, just a little disoriented.
She was then transported to Good Samaritan Hospital in Suffern, New York. Like I said, for the most part, she was in pretty decent shape other than being disoriented.
And the good news yesterday, she was reunited with her family, her husband thanking cops for doing a great job, and that homeowner, for that matter, helping find his wife. There is an update on that story of alleged anti-Semitism in a hostile environment at a Brooklyn high school. Yesterday, we told you about this teacher, Mrs. Kaminsky, a history teacher at Origins High, who says that she's regularly called a dirty Jew. Swastika is drawn on her desk. She's been threatened, her family threatened by students. Now another teacher came out yesterday to say that Islamophobia is running rampant in this school and that she's threatened for being Muslim. Lisa Rosner, by the way, who used to work here, I hired here at WABC. She now works at CBS, doing an amazing job there. She was the one who was able to catch up with this teacher, Camila Shulanova. And here she describes what's going on inside Origins High, which just sounds like a crazy place to go to high school.
I'm a Muslim, and I've been called many, many names. And recently, he actually called me a terrorists.
Yeah, sounds like a great place to go to class. She, by the way, was confirming what Mrs. Kaminsky said, that anti-Semitism is running rampant in the school.
I had one student draw a swastika on a notebook. I was like, okay, you do know that's not right. She's like, yeah, I know. Okay, that's it. The next thing you know, he's going to the classes, comes back the next day.
She says she's reported all these incidents to the principal, to the UFT, to the DOE, and they've done nothing. She says she's heard nothing back from them. The principal, or they're calling her the acting principal, cameraman, says she's never been made aware of all this discrimination. She did speak to Lisa Rosner.
There have been some extreme misrepresentations. Every time there's any kind of discriminatory language or hurtful action that happens to either a student or a staff member, it is reported, it is investigated, and then appropriate consequences are given.
Yeah, so some students, by the way, at the school, saying that the teacher has it right, not the principal. That she's, they say it's chaotic there. It's out of control, and that this principal's not doing her job. WABC News Time 5:39. Some New Yorkers taking part in the final hearings, the MTA congestion pricing hearings in Lower Manhattan. Lots of people showing up on the final day, including 24 taxi drivers rallying outside the MTA headquarters, disapproving of the new tolls, say it's going to hurt them, and they're already hurt. Regular New Yorkers stepping up to speak, like this woman.
I take care of my 97-year-old mom. I go pick her up, take her to Queens, then come back. When I come back home, I'm going to be charged. It's not right.
Last week, you had firefighters arguing they should be exempt from congestion pricing tolls so they can go to and for from the firehouses in Lower Manhattan. Some New Yorkers, though, at the hearing, like the other ones, got up to say that they think congestion pricing is a win, like this man, who wants traffic patterns to go back to where they were during the pandemic, nice and quiet.
I saw what our streets could look like with less congestion from private vehicles.
We should be taking full advantage of New York City's density to de-emphasize car use.
So you had the MTA again saying that they're only going to use the money they collect from these tolls to pay for system upgrades.
Every dollar from congestion pricing will be dedicated to improving the mass transit system in the region. Okay.
A final vote going to take place sometime in the spring. If approved, congestion pricing could start as early as June. Under the current plan, cars would be charged $15, motorcycles $7.50, taxis $2.50. Trucks would be charged the most, anywhere between $24 and $36, depending on the size. Some people at the hearing urging the MTA board to consider lowering those proposed tolls, starting at a lower price point so people can afford to go back and forth in that zone. While we're talking about the subways, police continue to investigate all these attacks. Boy, I can't keep track of all of them down below. Of course, you had that 64-year-old man who was kicked onto the tracks at Penn Station on Sunday after someone came up behind him, kicked him in the back. The attack happened around 5 in the afternoon on the AC and E line. The man was helped back onto the platform, suffered injuries to his back and knee. He was taken to the hospital, stable condition. Here's his wife saying that, he's kind of in bad shape.
He's a good guy. He's pious people, Muslim pious people. Uh-huh. He has a VR.
I think that was a neighbor. Police releasing surveillance footage of the man they say is wanted in connection with this attack.
You can ask him what I did to you. Why you kick me? This will be my question. Why you kick me? I'm gentle with everybody.
Yes. So he says he doesn't understand why this guy attacked him. It came out of nowhere. And then you had that 17-year-old woman just a couple hours later up on 168th Street, punched in the face after some sort of interaction with another rider. You had a 27-year-old man slashed on a subway train last week. And the list goes on and on. The stats show that crime is up, major crimes, 13% over last year in the first couple months of the year. We did have that conductor, you remember, last week in Brooklyn. He was on the train coming into the train station. He stuck his head out like they do to make sure the platform is clear. As he did that, someone slashed him across the neck. And in that moment, he thought he was going to die. Blood gushing out. He gets on to the PA system of the train. He says, there's anybody here who can help me? Well, there was a doctor who was on the train. His name was Dr. Patrick McGorry. He raced to help this conductor, and he did. He helped Alton Scott. And so yesterday, Alton said, I want to meet this doctor and thank him. So he did. And here's what it sounded like when the two met yesterday.
I will, I'll remember you for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Dr. Patrick, you stood with me. You never leave. You told me, you said, I'm not leaving. And I asked, you said, no, not leaving. That was, the rest of my life. I remember this face, Dr. Patrick. God bless you. You're a good man.
Thanks.
You're my angel.
It's always good to know that most New Yorkers are like that doctor. They're good people, and that doctor doing the right thing in that moment saved his life. No two ways about it. A family's move into a rental home in the Catskills did not go as planned. We told you a little bit about this story yesterday. So they were unloading the moving trucks into the house. They were completely done moving in when all of a sudden the basement just exploded.
Laying down, and all of a sudden the whole house went boom and shook and ran out the door.
spread what we could and go. We just paid the down payment. We paid the rent, the month's rent, and it just ended with a disaster.
I mean, they were exhausted after a day of moving U-Haul trucks and stuff into the house, and then the whole place essentially exploded. I mean, thankfully, there was one injury, and it's relatively minor. And investigators now have zeroed in on the propane heat system as the likely cause of this explosion.
Gas line had started leaking and had filled the basement up with gas and then had just exploded.
Yeah, so one man suffered burns, hospitalized. Everyone else got out safely. Significant damage inside this home. Some of the walls, parts of the ceilings collapsed. It's amazing that nobody was hurt more intensely. A code inspector visiting yesterday says he was safe enough to let the family go in and retrieve the belongings that they had just put in the house. But the house has now been condemned. The owner of the house, he showed up yesterday. He says he was shocked and by what had taken place, and he said he was going to do everything he could to help this family.
And we got people to rent out the place, and it like blew up. It's crazy.
Yeah, totally.
Hope they're doing okay.
Yeah. So anyway, he said he's going to do what he can. The Red Cross also helping this family out today. 5:45. Let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk where we find Justin Ellick.
Thank you, Noah Maledon. Start here on the floor in the NBA. The Nets lost a close one at home to the Memphis Grizzlies. Final score 106-102. Nick Claxton had 21 points for the Nets, who were coming off consecutive victories over Atlanta that had allowed them to pull within two games of the Hawks for 10th place in the Eastern Conference and the final spot in the play-in tournament. Brooklyn is right back at it tonight at home, welcoming in the Philadelphia 76ers for a 7:30 p.m. tip-off. Additionally, the Knicks return to action at the Garden, getting set to welcome in the Atlanta Hawks for a 7:30 p.m. tip as well. In the NHL, the Rangers were the only local squad in action yesterday just to get doubled up on home ice by the Florida Panthers. Final score 4-2, Will Cooley and Chris Kreider scored for the Metro Division-leading New York, which lost for the third time in four games after that 10-game winning streak. Rangers also had their six-game home winning streak snapped. Looking ahead to tonight on the ice, the Islanders return to action at home, set to face off against the visiting St. Louis Blues at 7:30. The Devils will lace them up as well, set to get going a bit earlier at 7 p.m. at home against the aforementioned Panthers. They'll do that, without now former head coach Lindy Ruff, who was fired yesterday, with New Jersey currently struggling to contend in a clogged Eastern Conference, not far removed from winning a playoff round last season. Travis Green, an assistant for Ruff and the former coach for the Vancouver Canucks, was named the club's interim head coach. A couple of notable headlines coming out of the NFL offseason yesterday. Firstly, out of Philadelphia, Eagles star center Jason Kelce, one of the key leaders for a team that has made six postseason appearances and two Super Bowl trips over the past seven seasons, announced his retirement in a tear-filled speech yesterday, closing the book on what is sure to be a first ballot Hall of Fame career. Secondly, out west in Denver, the Broncos have informed nine-time Pro Bowl quarterback Russell Wilson that they plan to release him, a move that ends a tumultuous two-season run with the team. This move will be effective as of the start of the new league year, set to begin on March 13th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. That is your Sports Gnome, and I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Let's catch you up on some of the big stories of the morning. I can always tell when some story is really big. A lot of people will ask me about it, people who I know I'm in the news business, and no doubt it has been this story at a Babylon in Suffolk County where severed body parts were found last Thursday. A girl on her way to class found an arm on the side of the road. Police come in. They find another arm, a leg, and a head. And we still don't have a lot of details of what exactly took place here. The Suffolk County executive, Ed Romaine, he was out and about yesterday. News 12 caught up with them, and they said, hey, what is this all about? These body parts found in Southard's Pond Park in Babylon. Should we be worried about what's going on here? And here's what he had to say.
They have several leads. A lot of it is laboratory work. A lot of that is the work of our police laboratory and our medical examiner.
The county executive would not say if the FBI has been contacted in connection to the case. Those body parts found last Thursday, they think it's a man and a woman. So they apparently have not ID'd them yet. At least the medical examiner has not released any sort of report. But Ed Romaine claiming that we shouldn't be worried, that this is a one-off thing, even though no arrests have been made and we don't know who these body parts belong to.
I believe this was an isolated incident where people chose a park to put the bodies, not where it occurred. And I think anyone that is looking at that will tell you that. So it did not occur in that park.
All right, but maybe they're no more than just not letting on anything or all the details yet, but they're telling us that we shouldn't be worried, even though those body parts were found in a park last Thursday. More cops going to be heading down into the subways with the crime number spiking.
Governor Hochul responding after a recent increase in subway crime.
I will tell you, this is very much top of mind. How we, you know, statistically, I can tell you things are not as bad as they've been. That doesn't help anybody feel better, and I know that.
Hinting that more police officers could soon be making their way into the transit system, the governor adds the NYPD has already surged 1,000 additional officers into the subway system daily.
These are not new conversations. We're always in communication with the mayor, NYPD, MTA, about passenger and employee safety.
James Flippin for 77 WABC News.
While we're talking crime, let's talk about the crime in Crown Heights. Three people killed in Crown Heights last week. None of their murders have been solved. It's been at the forefront for, well, since last week. It started Monday when a bodega worker was killed over a $2 cigar that he refused to give to somebody who came in for free, and that guy came back and shot him to death. Then you had Lamin Baugh, 33-year-old, who was shot in the head. We don't know why. His murderer has not been found. And the week ended on Friday with 13-year-old Troy Gill being shot to death. His family last night taking part in an anti-violence rally in Crown Heights. Here's his mother.
He was not in a gang. He was a great boy. He had a big personality. And he was too big to be here. And he's gone, but his spirit is here.
Members of the clergy, community advocates speaking out one by one, calling for the gun violence to end, reflecting on the lives lost in those three recent tragedies.
He was tiny and mighty, big heart, man. Very boisterous person. He loved to dance. He loved music.
He was a baby, and that should never happen to him or anybody else's baby or anybody.
I definitely should not. The goal of the rally, of course, to promote peace. Police say they do have some leads in these three murders, but they have not been solved. In New Jersey, the judge overseeing the corruption trial of Senator Bob Menendez ruled that items seized in the search of his home and phone will be allowed in his trial. And someone also involved in his trial is now handing over evidence to suggest that, yes, he did try to bribe Menendez with a Mercedes-Benz.
During the searches of Menendez's home in Inglewood Cliffs in June of 2022, FBI agents seized several gold bars and hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash. Meantime, last week, a co-defendant in the case, Jose Uribe, pleaded and agreed to cooperate with the prosecution. I'm Brian Shook.
We told you yesterday, we've been telling you for a couple of weeks now, about these public hearings with the MTA and congestion pricing. Well, in New Jersey, they're getting socked twice. If you want to drive into the city, you'll soon have to pay that toll. And if you want to take New Jersey Transit into the city, you're going to see likely a 15% hike in fares. 15%, that's a lot of money. The board, the New Jersey Transit Board, is holding public hearings, much like the MTA held public hearings over the last week. It won't make a lick of a difference. Joe Versace of the New Jersey Association of Railroad Passengers, one of the people who's going to speak out on behalf of riders.
Which now paying the highest monthly commuter train fares in the country now before the fare increase. Anybody who can will get off the system.
Yeah, well,
drive.
Yeah, drive. But if you drive, then you get congestion pricing here in the city. You lose both ways. So New Jersey Transit says they need the money because they have a $107 million shortfall. Now, some of that is from the pandemic, and a fair amount of those riders who used to ride into the city every day no longer have to, or at least not every day. So you'll get that hike of 15%, and they're promising more hikes because they say they just don't have the cash to run the system. That is, those public hearings continued yesterday. It was the last day of the MTA congestion pricing hearings. And some of the people speaking out were New Jersey lawmakers. Governor Murphy spoke out. And then you had Bergen County Executive Jim Tedesco, who told the MTA he's not going to let congestion pricing happen. And he's not going to let New Jersey drivers pay those tolls. And he told the board members yesterday he will see them in court.
This is nothing but a shameful money grab that will detrimentally hurt all of New York City's neighbors. If enacted, it is no doubt it will result in even more traffic for Bergen County.
Yeah, so the MTA promising yesterday that this will start in June, but you have Staten Island, New Jersey, other organizations that are suing to stop this. It'll be interesting to see what takes place. It is a Super Tuesday. It is a suspense-free Super Tuesday, which, well, if you're a Trump fan or a Joe Biden fan, you're probably happy about. But for the rest of us, we wanted a race, you know, something to talk about on Super Tuesday. But there's nothing to talk about. It seems like Joe Biden and Donald Trump will be the candidates. 15 Republican primaries and caucuses going to take place today. Democrats in 16 states and territories going to go to the polls as well. A total of 865 delegates at stake on the GOP side, and a third of the total will be doled out before this summer's Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. Trump is on the ballot in Colorado. Of course, they tried to keep him off, but the Supreme Court ruled they could not do that. Donald Trump taking a victory lap over that court ruling yesterday.
They worked long, they worked hard, and frankly, they worked very quickly on something that will be spoken about 100 years from now and 200 years from now. Extremely important.
Yeah, so I guess the only suspense, and I don't even know if you could call it suspense, is how will Nikki Haley do today? There's no suggestion in any of these pre-primary polls that she will win any of them. Of course, she won the District of Columbia on Sunday.
77 WABC and Bergen Newbridge Medical Center honor the life of legendary broadcaster and our friend, Ernie Anastas.
Hi, it's Ernie Anastas. You know, your thoughts can affect how you feel. Bergen Newbridge Medical Center is the largest hospital in New Jersey, providing comprehensive, equitable, compassionate, and high-quality emergency inpatient and outpatient medical care, plus mental health services and substance use disorder treatment. The Bergen Newbridge team can address your total health needs in one convenient location. Call 201-225-7130 for an appointment or newbridgehealth.org.